Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I don't know why this text tickled me. Dana Brown only said Boris in that clip. Is it possible he's talking about some random Russian guy named Boris? That would be funny. Because it is only like a 7-second clip. He could have just been like, oh, wow, Boris just texted me. My friend Boris Zhukov, yeah.
I saw some random clip a couple days ago on Twitter where it was a comedian talking about how whenever he's out, you know, he's coming home from comedy clubs and everything, he's out walking alone in strange cities at 2 a.m. a lot of times. And he says whenever he's in fear of where he might be in a bad situation, like if somebody walks up to him and is like, hey, what the hell are you doing in this neighborhood? He speaks in a Russian accent. Oh. He responds in a Russian accent. He's like, oh, you think this is bad neighborhood?
And it backs him off.
There's something like, because us as Americans have been trained by Hollywood for decades and decades to fear the Russians.
Yeah.
And there is something about a Russian gangster sounding dude that is that cuts across all cultural barriers.
Dude.
And you yes. just, it scares the hell out. I was on a plane once with these two Russian special op looking dudes. Like, they looked like they were in their mid 40s. They had military haircuts. They were lean as hell. Yeah. They looked scary. And they had Russian, you know, you could tell they were speaking in Russian to each other.
Okay.
And they were watching a movie on their computer at full volume with no headphones. And none of us said a damn thing. Not the flight attendants, not anybody sitting anywhere near them or anything, you know? Just like, they just let them be. That's probably a pretty good man. And the movie's in Russian, so you can't even enjoy it or anything.
Oh, my
like,
God.
I'm just gonna sit here and pretend like I'm not a beta male.
That's hilarious. So, but you didn't even know what they did. They just looked like Russian
They
guys.
Looked Russian military.
Yeah, they were Russian AF. Oh, my God.
Or at least former Russian military that now works, you know, security for an oligarch. Because they were in first class, too, you know?
That's funny, because honestly, that's one of the most annoying things is people listening to their stuff on a plane. Like, I would say something to almost anybody that they're doing that.
Yeah.
Not guys who look like Russian
I just didn't
guys,
feel no. like it.
Yeah, I don't blame
like,
you.
I just turned the volume up on my headphones
totally
a little bit
get
and let it be.
I totally get it. You know who would say something to them? Probably Bill Belichick. He would probably say something. He'd mumble it to them. Here's Bill Belichick yesterday. This is on McAfee. Where he, at the very end of this cut is what you need to listen to, but he talks about the players and how important the players were to his success. And this is interesting, given some of what we played yesterday from Ted Johnson. Do Bill Belichick and Ted Johnson actually agree on something? Here's Bill Belichick yesterday.
Players win games. You can't win games without good players. I don't care who the coach is. It's impossible. You can't win without good players. You know, I found out when I had Taylor and Banks and Harry Carson, Pepper Johnson, Jim Burt, Everson Walls, all those guys, the Giants, and same thing, you know, when we got good at Cleveland and then at New England. I mean, it's, you know, it's Brady, it's McGinnis, it's Vrabel, it's Brewski, it's Corey Dillon, it's Randy Moss, Troy Brown, Lawyer Malloy, Ty Law, Rodney Harrison. Those are the guys that won the games. Man, I didn't make any tackles. I didn't make any kicks. That was Vinatieri that made that kick in 4 inches of snow. You got to have good players. And as a coach, you want to give your players a chance to win. You want to put them in a position where if they go out there and play well, they'll have a chance to win. That's what Coach Parcells taught me is there's always a way to win. You just got to figure out what it is, and you have to give the players a chance.
They don't name it the Star Trophy. It's named the Lombardi Trophy.
Maybe they should name it the Brady Trophy. She won seven of them.
She named it. It wasn't on McAfee. He was with Jim Gray on that Let's Go podcast.
Yeah.
That's what that was. I remember being a Zoom. I always think, when I think of Belichick on Zoom, I think of the McAfee show. So he was on with Jim Gray there. It was that comment at the very end that people are kind of running with today.
They ran it, yeah, and it was kind of just like an offhand little joke, you know, to something that Jim Gray said, but now it's being turned into, like, this is a campaign
it's
he's
on. A topic.
On
they're asking on Get Up this morning, should they change the name of the Lombardi Trophy to the Brady Trophy?
Should they change the logo to Just like, you know, you always have conversations about how the NBA logo should be Jordan, the Jordan Jumpman or
Jerry
something.
Jerry West right now.
Yeah, yeah, instead of Jerry West. Yeah, should they change the logo to a screaming Tom Brady? I don't think he meant it all that seriously.
No.
But I do think it's interesting because, you know, a lot of these are things a lot of coaches will say. You know, it's not like Bill Belichick has never said anything like that before. But Liam Cohen, the new coach for the Jags, once you get past him butchering Duval, however he said it.
How did he?
Duval.
He actually was pretty good in his press conference,
I thought.
Yeah, and one of the things that he really stressed was that players win games. And I wonder if Belichick, again, that's something that's said by a lot of coaches, but I wonder if Belichick had seen that interview recently so it was fresh in his mind for him to bring it up in that situation.
I think that
he 100% believes that. But I think that Belichick also, if you look back on a lot of his quotes or just the way he conducted his business in New England, it very much was in line with that philosophy. But because he's Belichick and because he operates a certain way, I don't think probably most of his players ever felt that that's how he felt.
Yeah.
Belichick probably has the largest group of players that he loves who, when they were playing for him, thought he despised them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they have a conversation with him after their career and Belichick's telling them how he feels about it, the player is like, oh my God, coach, I thought you hated me.
I had no
idea you felt this way.
Yeah.
So it's just he didn't always express it to the players themselves. But I think their whole methodology in New England was find out what the strengths of a player are. Don't worry too much about what they can't do. Find out what their strengths are, what they can do, and let's put them in position to do that. And that was his coaching genius, was his ability to get those kinds of performances out of guys who would go elsewhere, running backs especially, and do nothing at all. They would look like superstars when they were in New England.
Yeah, I'm guessing one of the players who would think that Belichick is not all that fond of him, and maybe right, would be our friend Ted Johnson. Now, Belichick just said it's about the players and listed about 20 players off the top of his head and said, no, it's about the players. If I don't have good players, I don't have all those rings. I'm paraphrasing. Well, you guys just listen to him say it. Here was Ted Johnson, our former colleague here at 610 on his afternoon show on WEEI in Boston a couple days ago, giving Belichick 10% of the credit for the 6 Super Bowl rings.
You want me to chop it up?
Yeah.
I go 60, Brady. You ready for that? You're not going to like this.
No, I don't think I am.
I'm going to love this.
30% others, 10% Bill.
That's Ted Johnson.
Let me ask you guys a question.
Did you just say 10% Bill Belichick?
Yeah.
10%?
Out of 100?
Out of 100 got me.
I mean, that's where in our obsession for having either or answers to stuff or to be able to put just numbers and rankings on things, It's so frustrating because it's impossible to separate the two. Like, obviously, yes, it's the players, but it's also that Belichick is the guy who found the players and coached the players and found the coaches to coach the players and all of that. That it's impossible to separate the two and divvy it all up.
Sounds
and yet, we're obsessed with doing stuff like that.
I'm very obsessed with it. You know that. It sounds to me like Belichick and Ted agree with each other on this one. This is the one thing they agree on. It was all about the players. Now
I think that, you know what, if somebody asks Belichick, like, hey, what do you think of this? Belichick would totally say, I agree. You know, 10% is too high.
Okay.
He would give the smart answer about it.
Do you think he's lying when he says that?
I think he probably feels the way I do about it, is that it's everything.
Yeah.
It's everything all combined. It's, okay, what's the most important ingredient in a bread recipe?
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, is it the flour?
Yeah,
you can't have it without the flour or the... Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I don't know what bread is made of.
I don't
know.
It's very tasty.
But with all of those things.
But I love it.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Is it the oven? Can't have any of it without the oven,
no,
you know?
Right. You know, it's funny. The sentiment with Belichick there about putting the players in position to do what they do best and what you just kind of said about how good they were at doing that, it does bring me back to the Texans a little bit, and especially that last game. I'm thinking that last game against Kansas City as we're watching – Dalton Schultz trying to secure the edge, you know, in the run game, and you know, just watch certain times of the year where if it looks like Bobby Slowick and the offense in general is just asking guys to do things that they're either not good at or not comfortable doing, or as a really both. If you're not comfortable, you're probably not good at it. What do you think Bobby Slowik does next? What's his next move, do you think?
I think usually when you've been fired and you're still under contract, the typical thing is if you don't get a job right away, you go and you either be a position coach somewhere or you go as an analyst, which mm-hmm. is the sweet gig. Because these days, especially, a lot of it's done remotely.
Yeah.
You remember when Vic Fangio was – people made a big deal about how Vic Fangio had been working with the Eagles a couple years back in their previous Super Bowl run, I believe.
Yeah, it was. He was a consultant for them. Yeah.
But he was – at the time, he was – mostly working outside the facility and just actually working with the Eagles offense, mm-hmm. looking at their game plans and all of that. There's lots of jobs like that. But he could go back to pro football focus.
He could.
Yeah.
It's a bigger operation.
I'd be surprised.
If he went back to PFF.
Yeah, yeah.
People, I don't know if everybody knows that. Like, Bobby Slowik was coaching for a while and then was an analyst for Pro Football Focus. So was he one of the ones, like, doing grades on offensive linemen
and
things like
that? No, I think he was responsible for teaching the analysts how to do the grades.
Oh.
Or just maybe look at a lot of the way they... Because people would be surprised to know that a lot of teams do subscribe to PFF.
Yeah.
Not for the version you can get on the internet, but for specific data.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do... Their grades are the dumbest thing they do, but it's the grades are the ones that are most talked about.
I like the most.
Yeah, right. Because we like we talked about, we like to have numbers that we can attach to things.
Yes.
But their grades are the most like unreliable things that they do. A lot of the stats that they do are really, really valuable, and a lot of NFL teams do use them. So I think they probably liked having somebody that could help them refine those stats the most and all the rest of it. But I can't imagine that's what he wants. I think that he probably looked at that as like a way to look at it, look at the entire league and watch a lot of film and break a lot of things down and get a feel for how different teams operate. So it was probably really valuable in that regard. And he could look at things through a different perspective. But ultimately, I'm guessing it was all part of a plan for being a better football coach.
You know what would be good for him, I think? You see a lot of coaches do this, especially the ones that still have money left on their deals. You know, I don't know what Bobby Slowik's contract is. I know he reportedly got a big raise last year to stay on as OC with the Texans. So, you know, if the coordinator contracts are guaranteed the same way head coaches' contracts are, then if he's got some money, if he's got the ability to do this, you see a lot of coaches, Seth, take the year off and they travel like through the months of March and April. They're going to all sorts of different college spring practices.
Yeah.
You know, they're going through their network of guys that they've got relationships with, and they're observing and they're taking notes. And then during training camps in the summer, you know, Bobby could probably go still spend time back in San Francisco or in other places he's been and coached. And I think that's productive, and I think it'd be really productive for Bobby, even just the optics of it, looking like he's trying to, because I think one of the big
involved,
criticisms was his, like, the lack of creativity, how hell-bent he was on doing just his thing. If he were going to places where he's taking elements of other people's stuff, I think it would be a really good look for him, at least.
Yeah, it would probably be good just fundamentally for educational purposes, too.
No
question. And there might be teams that want to talk to him, and then you're networking and all
networking,
the rest of it that goes along with it.
Yep.
I remember when, with the Texans, I think it was I can't remember which year it was. It would have been, what, 2000? The year before Coughlin took the job with the Giants. So
early.
Whatever it was, he kind of took a year off and was going around and touring and everything.
Yeah.
And he was at Texans practice for a few days. And I can remember... I got rid of this guy. He had been coached for my first 5 years, and I was, you know, terrified of the man.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he's standing on the sidelines in practice, and I practiced my ass off for a few days.
See, can you imagine, like, and like whoever was at practice for Sports Radio 610 that day, and they were doing their like winners and losers of that day at practice, like, Seth Payne has
been, oh boy, my gosh,
they're predicting Pro Bowls for Seth Payne. Like, Seth Payne might make the Pro Bowl this year. Did you see him?
I was afraid that I'd get cut after Tom Coughlin watched one of my practices. Yeah.
And he wasn't even the coach. It would have been
power he had over me.
It would have been 2003 would have been that year, because he took a year off between 02 and 04. So yeah, man. So Bobby Slowik, I don't see him winding up on somebody's stat, like as a quarterback's coach or anything. So I would take the year off if I were him, and I would try like hell to get back to being an OC sooner rather than later. You don't want to get stuck
on a
lower rung,
you know? Yeah, you know where he can't go back to San Francisco.
Right.
Because I think that's part of the – I think part of the concern or the stigma about him would be like, okay, he's just trying to be Kyle Shanahan or whatever. Yeah, I think he's got to get outside of the Shanahan tree a bit, because he was in Washington before that.
He was, you know? Yeah. Okay, so right, he's been with Shanahan. Yeah, the whole time. Okay, so does the same notion apply to Robert Saleh going back to be the DC, or is this more of an offensive thing with
Biden? No, I think with Saleh it doesn't matter, because for one, it's his defense. Yeah. And Pete Carroll was a bigger influence on Robert Saleh than Kyle Shanahan was. Yeah. It's the other side of the ball. He's already established as a really good defensive coordinator. So him going back to San Francisco, it doesn't feel like he's going back to suck at mother's teat.
Right.
It's just him going back to do what he does, which is be a really good defensive coordinator.
And I guess thus far it's safe to assume that DeMeco is going to continue with the same structure of him being the guy calling the plays on defense and not having a CEO type.
Yeah, it all depends on, you know, how he feels with Matt Burke, yeah, and whether he thinks Matt Burke is ready or should take over for him, yeah, and DeMeco becomes more of a guy. You never know with the play calling exactly. It's always a committee affair on game day, no matter who the coach is, because there's certain guys that are responsible for short yardage. There's certain guys that are responsible for third downs and all of that. So the head coach, the play caller, is always consulting with those guys,
yeah,
with their area of focus for the week. So, it, you know, maybe DeMeco has already started doing that with Matt Burke a little bit.
Maybe.
Well, you don't really know until you find out later when they write the book about the three Super Bowl championships.
Let's hope so, man. That would be absolutely amazing.
Why can't we be the team that people are saying is cheating via the officials? Damn it. That's what I want.
Would you take all the cheating and referee conspiracy theories for three Super Bowl rings? Oh, my God. In a second.
Oh. Yeah,
in a second.
I know how to use my filters on social media.
Yeah.
You just filter a few words out, and you never have to see any of the allegations.
Hey, I'll take good job. Hey, I'll take two World Series championships for a being better than everybody else scandal. How do you like that?
At some point, you just start to own it. Yeah. You know, I enjoyed just being able to, like, you know, make jokes to Yankees fans about how, like, what do you guys expect? We own NASA.
Yep.
We've got the best technology in the world. You're never going to beat us. You'll never be able to outrun our cheating.
That's right.
Yeah, just own it, Chiefs.
Yep.
Come on.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, speaking of the offensive line, we just got done talking about Bobby Slowick, the offensive line. I had a lot of good questions to the podcast that I wanted to bring to you this week, Seth. Like, I had a listener want us to go buy, hold, and sell on the Texans offensive linemen this year.
So join us next as I do Sean's podcast for him.
No, it's done already. It's in the can. I just thought you would enjoy these questions. So we'll do that. Buy, hold, sell on the Texans O linemen. We'll do that coming up next. Stay there.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Buy, hold, sell on the Texans offensive line. This question came in from a listener to the Utopia Football Podcast. So let's do that. I think it was Joe Q who sent this in, loyal listener to this show as well. So Seth, I've got seven listed here. The original, the starting five that were kind of the starting five towards the end of the year, and then Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green. Shaq is in here. So we'll go through them. Buy, hold, sell. Buy basically means they're an anointed starter. Hold means they're competing for a job, and sell means see you later. We're dumping them.
Yeah.
And I realize, like, maybe some of these answers might change depending on who the OC is. Who knows? But let's run through these here. I want to get your take on these. All right. So we'll start with what I think is probably a fairly easy one: Laremy Tunsil.
So buy means they're an anointed starter.
Yep.
I'm buying Laremy Tunsil, and I'm resetting my expectations on him because he really did make a concerted effort to become a more complete player this year. He's always been brilliant as a pass protector, but not nearly as notable as a run blocker. I think he really worked at becoming a better run blocker midway through the season. And I also do think that he worked really hard at not false starting all the time.
Yeah.
They ultimately, his false starts, which he's been a league leader, one of the league leaders in pretty much every year he's been with the Texans, it's ultimately a selfish act because you're trying to time the snap count so you don't get beaten pass protection, and yet you're harming your team at various times during the year. The really genuinely great offensive tackles don't have many false starts in a season.
Yeah.
So the fact that he definitely worked on that, and it stopped being an issue really until Davis Mills was in the Tennessee game, which I can make an excuse for that because of the cadence and all that. But I'm cool with Laramie for now.
I am
now
too.
If there were an extra elevation above like extend, not just buy but extend,
yeah,
I'm holding off on that.
Okay.
For now.
So if there was strong buy, you wouldn't go strong buy on Laramie. You'd go just right. A solid buy on Laramie Tunsil. Okay. Titus Howard. Buy, hold, sell Titus Howard.
I'm buying him at left guard.
Okay.
Well, hold would be competing for a job. And I think Blake Fisher showed some things, but he's got to take a step. Yeah. I think, you know what, Titus might be in hold mode where I want him to either really genuinely embrace the left guard role,
yep,
as Blake Fisher competes at right tackle,
yeah,
or that it is a genuine competition, that if Blake Fisher comes back a little bit beefier in a good way and refines some of the technique and everything, that there's – I think he's in perpetual competition with Blake Fisher for the right tackle spot
right
now.
That makes sense, yeah.
And then it's a question of whether they want him at left guard.
So for you, there's two Tituses. There's Titus at left guard, which would be a – and I think you said this a couple of days ago. You the only anointed starters you would have on the offensive line would be Laramie Tunsil, and if it was left guard, Titus Howard.
Yeah.
I think you said that a couple days
but
ago.
But I'd also put that – but I think he's got a – I mean, they'll put – if they choose to have him move to left guard, they'll put him in there.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's still – he's got to be better than he was this year.
Okay.
I think there were some good things they could do in the offense when he was at left guard that they couldn't do with the other ones. But there were also some weaknesses because he's playing out of position. Even though he's played a boatload of left guard,
yeah,
he just – I think because he's always been so reluctant to play left guard, he's not as refined as he should be. So I put a hold on him at left guard.
Well, you keep getting yo-yoed back and forth, too. You know what I mean? From two very different,
yeah,
positions. So, all right. Jarrett Patterson.
Hold.
Yeah.
Compete for a job.
Yep. I think it's an easy one. Shaq Mason.
Yeah, I think it's time to move on.
Sell.
And, yeah. He's a you can have a net savings on the cap by letting go of him. You're going to take like a $10 million hit, but the net savings is it's a net savings,
yeah,
still. That you've got to get somebody younger, or that somebody that's, if they're a little bit older, that they're not showing their age the way Shaq Mason is.
Yeah, if you missed it earlier, we had John Harris on in the 7 o'clock hour, and I thought he had a couple really interesting names on the offensive line that he saw at the Senior Bowl this week. Tyler Booker at Alabama was one of them. Basically described him, Seth, as like an offensive line Will Anderson coming out,
yeah,
of Alabama. Just that kind of energy. And then Gray Zabel is sort of an off-the-radar name probably for a lot of casual fans because he played at North Dakota State. But, man, John, some of the stories Johnny told about him from Senior Bowl, like go back. It was in the 7 o'clock hour at 7. We had Johnny on earlier today. You can listen to it on the Odyssey app. All right, so Shaq Mason, I'm in agreement with you on all of these so far. Shaq is sell. Blake Fisher.
Hold. He's competing for a job.
Yep.
He's competing with Laramie at right tackle and or anybody else.
With Titus at right tackle.
Titus. If they move Titus to left guard, I think he's still got to show and prove that he can earn being a right tackle. If they decided to say right from the get-go that Titus Howard is a left guard, then I hope they go out and get a veteran swing tackle, like a George Fant. Like,
yeah,
let's say George Fant was on this team, the 2023 version of George Fant.
Oh, perfect.
I would want Blake Fisher to be competing with him.
For the right
tackle.
So
whoever that might be, if they get a veteran swing tank, is a journeyman type, then Blake Fisher is competing with that
guy. Is Blake Fisher the betting favorite for you right now to be the right tackle in week one for this team? I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Titus at left guard and Fisher at right tackle is, when they dice it all up in the offseason, they might feel like, okay, this is our best chance to have a respectable offense.
I think so too. I think, you know who I think knows that? Titus Howard. Based,
yeah,
on kind of how he was answering those questions about that after the season was over, he was way more open
to it.
Yes.
In terms of being up for the challenge.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, last two. Juice Scruggs, buy, hold, sell.
Hold.
Yep.
Just like with Jarrett Patterson. I don't want Scruggs being out there treated like, oh, yep, you're the number one guy. You're our center. Here we go. Like, those two guys at least need to be competing with each other. Mm-hmm. And then whomever you draft or whomever else. Yeah, that's got to be a competition.
Kenyon Green.
Okay, I know they're going to keep him. And because of his upside and because of his draft status, I would just cut the cord right now.
Would you?
And yeah, I've seen enough, man.
Are you nervous? Because to me, I would say, well, there's no harm in bringing the guy back to camp. Are you nervous that they're going to do what they did this year and give him the benefit of the doubt and just plug him back in there at guard?
Yeah, or if not, just maybe give him the benefit of the doubt even as a guy that can be competing for the job.
Yeah.
He's injured all the time. Mm-hmm. He's not good when he's in there and healthy. We've seen fat Kenyon. We've seen skinny Kenyon. I want to see more development out of a guy. I feel like there's rookie free agents and seventh round picks that show more development over the course of three seasons than Kenyon Green has.
Yeah, yeah.
So it might just be time for him to go try to develop somewhere else.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because he costs the same to cut or keep. It's the exact same dollar amount.
Yeah, they'll keep him. That's my emotional answer. Yeah. It's like, all right, I've seen enough. No, just get guys in there that look like they're scrappy a-holes than whatever the hell this is.
I wonder if whoever's interviewing for the O-line job, because the Texans are in the market for an O-line coach, makes like salvaging Kenyon Green part of their sales pitch to become the O-line. You know, kind of like, you know, back when you're trying to salvage a quarterback, you know, you're trying to salvage David Carr back in the
day
or whatever.
Oh, I mean, yeah, there's positives you can point to. And I think the O-line coaches themselves would look at it and for all the reasons that Kenyon Green was a first-round pick.
15th pick, yeah.
He's shown flashes of that. And I think somebody new coming into it would definitely think, okay, let's get the best out of him. I'm worn out and beaten down from 3 years
of
it.
Dude, I was so encouraged by that Colts game in week one where he was plowing Zaire Franklin over and whatnot. And it turns out Zaire Franklin was probably thinking about his podcast at the time or something like that.
Yeah, he ended up getting that done to him by plenty of folks.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Larry is in Stafford.
It's like when you find out that the woman you were just with was actually paid for by your dad for your birthday. You're like, oh, thought I was just a smooth talker. No, thanks, Dad.
You're on a roll today, man. Larry's in Stafford. What's going on, Larry?
Nothing much, son. Except that's what dads are for, man. It's our duty to make sure that our sons have these kind of experiences so that they can learn how to go out and navigate this world, man. Oh, my. I don't mind my son understanding that whole philosophy that we have. Look here, son. I saw your truck yesterday, man. Are you sure you don't want to drop a box of that Yingling?
Do you, Larry? Do you want to become an intern for us for the week? Is that what I'm hearing right now?
I'm thinking I can make that road trip to New Orleans for a week, man. I got enough vacation time left, man, that I could possibly do it. Because that looks like that's gonna be a hell of a time, man. And you boys got individual rooms in New Orleans and don't have to hear Rich Lord snore and all that. Hey, man, that might sound like some fun, man. But I don't know about J-Lo, man, because J-Lo eats cereal out of a cup while he's driving across that bridge at Lake Charles. I might have to have a concern for Figgy and old Reggie, man. Mm-hmm. But look here. I know all these names, and everybody's getting a little restless about this OC search and everything. I'm okay with the Texans taking their time because I want them to get it right. And I tweeted out this morning, and I don't know if you guys answered the question or not, but I need to know if Nick Caley was in that building in New England with Jack Easterby, man. Because if he was in that building with Jack Easterby, I am a hell no on that. Because, see, I know how these rodents work. They start just sending their little tentacles out, man, and then all of a sudden you got an infestation again. And last week when Jack came out talking about he had all the influence on what's going on with my squad right now, I wanted to go find his ass then. I like the fact that Caley is over there in L.A., man, but I'm a big proponent of now, man, we had just gotten over that fiasco with Jack. Leave their ass buried where they are. What D'Amico and Nick are doing is they are going, turning over every rock to try to figure out how to get this offense fixed because I cannot have my quarterback looking like Blake Bortles or whatever again, man. We need CJ to be fixed, get his feet right, and get his head right so that we can finally get this thing because that contract is going to be about $70 million probably, man. So I want to make sure we're giving him the money that he deserved and that he earned. Fellas, I hope y'all have a good time in the boot, man. If y'all need some advice about Bourbon Street, which I know y'all don't, handle your business and watch your wallet. And son, when you go into the old casino over there, put $100 down for your boy and our heart.
Ah, you got it, Larry. I'll put $100 down for you. I'll text me and tell me exactly what you want it on, but I'll put it down for you, man.
What if we found out that Nick Caley, one of the reasons that they didn't elevate him to offensive coordinator was because Nick Caley and Belichick had butted heads on Jack Easterby back in the day. Caley didn't like Easterby at all, and Belichick was like, I don't know if I can trust you.
Okay. Well, then I think
man's a saint. He'll tell you himself.
I think Larry would pick Caley up at the airport for the Texans if that's the case.
Yeah, I guess I'm over that part of it.
I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah.
Easterby's influence in New England was exactly what it should have been, which was he was a character coach, player development type of guy. It wasn't the same scenario. So I think it's Easterby and what he became when he was given basically a blank check in a lot of regards to wreak havoc on the organization. Yeah. That was where we saw that Easterby. I'm not worried about the guys that saw him as a character coach in New England.
No, I'm not. But, man, it just goes to show you how much damage Easterby did to some people in the fan base. Larry's calling in 3 years after Easterby's gone and several years after Caley would have even crossed paths with Easterby. Like, I don't want anybody that had lunch in the same room with Jack Easterby.
Yeah.
Appreciate the phone call, Larry, as always. We will drink several beers on your behalf, thanks to Flight by Yingling, who's sending us to Radio Row next week. We cannot wait, and yes, several cases on its way to New Orleans for next week. Hey, listen to Sports Radio 610 on the Odyssey app for an hour each day for your entry into the Slam Dunk in Vegas National Contest. This is a really cool national contest. Remember, the winner will be headed to Vegas. Flight and hotel accommodations paid for you and three guests, plus you all are going to get $20,000 for the group to fund the ultimate viewing experience for the first two rounds of the college basketball tourney. One of the most fun times to go to Vegas. And just by listening for an hour a day to Sports Radio 610 on the Odyssey app, you could be on your way on this awesome contest and this great trip. All right, up next, cities that are most discussing boycotting the Super Bowl. The good folks at betonline.ag went to the most reliable source for stuff like this, X. And do these cities have a good reason to boycott the Super Bowl? And where do Houston Texan fans fall in this? That's coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
Pain and Pendergast with you. All right. Love me a good boycott. So the good folks at betonline.ag I hesitate to call it a study. I never know what to call these, Seth. You know, where they gather, they sort of geofence and geotrack all the data on there. I don't know this is as much geotracking as it is hashtag tracking. When they do those maps, that's when it's geotracking.
They just look to where people are. Like, one of the big ones they like doing is, okay, which teams are hated the most in which areas. So they'll look for keywords where, you know, Yankees in hate or Yankees bums, Yankees cheaters, whatever it is. And they see that, oh, this is most mentioned in Houston, Texas and Los Angeles or wherever else.
That's right. So the good people at betonline.ag did that whole thing where they come up with, in this case, they came up with the fan bases that are most claiming they'll boycott Super Bowl 59. These are fans that are essentially using their hashtag for their team, you know, like hashtag Bills Mafia, you know, hashtag Ravens Flock. I don't know what it is for the Ravens. You know, Chiefs, hashtag Chiefs Kingdom. I don't know what the Texans one is. It was We Are Texans a year ago, but I'm not sure what their hashtag, where the little logo pops up after it on X, you know, automatically. Yeah. But at any rate, and they combine that. They take all the hashtag, the tweets that have the hashtags, and then, like, the words boycott the Super Bowl or, you know, things like that. The fan base most claiming they'll boycott Super Bowl 59 is the Buffalo Bills. 24,000.
Which is impressive because they didn't, you know, divide this by population size or anything.
No.
Buffalo is one of the smallest markets in the NFL, and yet they had by far the most mentions about boycotting. And, you know, with understandable reasons why, but still, it's even, if you multiply it by however much bigger Houston is than Buffalo, then they've got 4 to 5 times as much as anybody else on here.
Yeah, it's not per capita. It's literally the sheer volume of tweets. It's the sheer number of tweets that they sent. So Bills are number one, and that's understandable because of, you know, the, like, they probably feel like in some ways they were cheated out of being there. You know, the fourth down, the catch by Xavier Worthy that wasn't overturned.
No, it's 100. Any of the boycotting talk is all based on the officials.
Sure.
It's not like in any given year people are like, I'm boycotting this because my team lost.
So the Bills have Bills fans would have a valid reason to boycott the Super Bowl. Number two on the list is the Ravens. Do the Ravens have a valid reason to boycott the Super Bowl? The Ravens
What were the sketchy calls in the Ravens game?
Well, the Ravens didn't even play the Chiefs in this postseason.
That's right.
They got knocked out by the Bills. They got knocked out last year by the Chiefs.
But like last year, what were there any? I can't remember any sketchy officiating from last year. Last year it was Zay Flowers not holding on to the football.
Lamar Jackson throwing a pick in the end zone in the fourth quarter. Those, like, so to me, I'm like, hey, Raven fans, get over it. This is your fault that you're not in the Super Bowl. You know, like, so you have no right to be boycotting the Super Bowl.
Both those teams are also the two teams that you've been wondering the last couple of years, okay, are they going to get over the hump? Are they going to figure out a way to beat Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs?
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, so maybe they've got a moderate reason for it. Not nearly as much of a reason as... The next one on the list is the Lions, who allowed the Commanders to come into their home and beat them by two touchdowns as the one seed.
Mm-hmm.
The Lions, these next couple, the Lions and the Browns are third and fourth on the list. The Browns can just, to use your term, go die. You've been boycotting the Super Bowl as a franchise since the inception of the Super Bowl, as have the Lions. You've never made it, you know?
This is the classic, like, well, I didn't want her anyway, you know?
Right.
Like, oh, yeah, of course I'll boycott it. I didn't even really want to go to the Super Bowl,
well
nor
put.
Have I ever.
Yes.
You know? People are making too big a deal about this.
Well
I'm
put.
Just fine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She's probably a lesbian anyway. That's exactly what those guys are saying.
Super Bowl, yes.
Yeah.
Vikings are next. Okay. I mean, they got knocked out in the first round of the postseason with Sam Darnold as their quarterback. They've never won a Super Bowl. We got a lot of teams that have never won a Super Bowl that are boycotting this thing all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. Vikings, they lost.
Because now you're going to feel like, oh, yeah, the whole system's rigged against us.
Yeah,
Now, as long as I can displace blame.
Now, this next one I'm not surprised at. They weren't a playoff team. They've won one Super Bowl in their history. It was many, many years ago. Well, not that many. It was 2009. The Saints, I'm not surprised at boycotting the Super Bowl because, Seth, if you recall, the Saints are among the most litigious fan base in the NFL. Remember they were ready to sue the NFL over that pass interference missed call?
That would have sent them to the – that was in the championship game,
It was
right?
in the NFC title game in 2018. That was the one the Rams went to and lost to the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. So they've stayed angry at the officials ever since.
Yeah, they get lawyers involved when they get screwed over. So that boycott doesn't surprise me at all with the New Orleans Saints. I'll just rattle through the next few here in the top 10. Dolphins, Bengals. Stop me if you think any of these have a good reason. Dolphins, Bengals, Cowboys, Giants. That rounds out the top 10 of fan bases that are boycotting the Super Bowl this year. So, Cowboy fans, you've been boycotting the conference title game in the Super Bowl since time immemorial, since 1995. Texans are 17th on this list, which I feel like I could say about almost any list. They're either 16th or 17th.
Which, again, it is, and it's a really large city, so I feel like that might even knock them even further down in terms of, I don't think, for the most part, Houstonians aren't blaming the officials for, even though we had a couple of the more egregiously sketchy calls in the game, I applaud the Texans fan base for kind of moving beyond that and realizing, all right, we got bigger fish to fry.
Yeah.
We've got Bobby Slowick's replacement to worry about.
Yep.
I'll tell you one thing about the Buffalo stuff. This has been such a frustrating week for me because I've had to, you know, the people that don't usually follow football are now, I grew up in that area.
Yeah.
You know, now they've been paying attention the last few weeks.
What are they saying?
They're sending me screenshots of reports they see on Facebook and asking me whether it's true or not. And like, I look at it immediately and my brain says that's 100% false. But then the other side of me that's like, all right, well, Seth, don't be a know-it-all. And who knows, maybe you'd miss this report. So the first one that I had to shoot down was that three officials from the Chiefs-Bills game had been fired by the NFL. Because of the bad calls. And I'm like, I'm almost positive, but let me spend 15 minutes Googling this crap. And nope, there's no truth to that. Yesterday, the one that I got was that the Pegulas, the owners of the Bills, are suing Andy Reid for his role in a match-fixing scandal.
Oh, my God.
Which immediately I see match-fixing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, this isn't even an American that's scamming you.
No.
This is a European soccer
Bundesliga
fan.
Bundesliga Premier League person.
Yeah, yeah. So, and definitely, all right. This one I didn't fact-check as closely because I know if Andy Reid himself had been implicated in something and was being sued for it, it would have been, I don't care how little I'm checking social media these days.
Know.
I would have known about it.
Yeah.
But they had to ask me if that was true or not. And this is where it freaks me out.
Yeah.
Is that these people are, like, this is how they're making decisions about many things in the world, and they don't always have a Seth Payne they can ask about.
No, no.
Like, when it comes to various other topics, much more important than football.
That's why I'm not a big fan of the satire accounts on X, where, you know.
Just because so many people, even when it's obvious satire, there's a good 10% of people in the replies that 100% believe whatever the satire
is. Well, satire's not obvious to everybody if you're not plugged into, say, sports on a daily basis. You know what I mean?
Satire's not obvious to a lot of people anymore either, because there is so much genuinely stupid stuff on the internet.
Yeah.
That sometimes you see something stupid and you're like, does this person mean this?
Right.
Or are they joking? I don't know.
Yeah. So if I may ask, if you said this, I apologize. Did the friends or relatives that you're talking about that were coming to you with these things that they saw on the internet, did they skew in a certain age bracket or anything? Did they skew older? Or were they just detached from sports?
In this particular situation, yes.
Okay.
But I have gotten into other... Oh, I was telling somebody who was in their 30s last year. Yeah. Same area of the country, by the way. Mm-hmm. I was up in my wife's hometown.
Yeah.
Oh, and it was... I can't remember which fake report it was, which was a completely fake or bogus report. But this was like 2 weeks after the fact. And she brought it up about how this quarterback or this coach was doing such and such, and it was part of an argument she was making to me, and I was like, no, it wasn't. It's everybody, man. It's everybody.
How did you handle it with this particular person or people that were coming to you with stuff in the last few days?
Okay, the older person that's been coming to me in the last couple days knows that they get duped by Facebook.
Okay.
And they've been duped in the past.
Okay.
So they're a self-aware,
gullible person.
Yeah. I don't know. So much of the stuff is just so well done, though. This one wasn't. This one read like a... This news report read like a Nigerian hostage situation.
You were embarrassed for your friend or relative in this case.
Yeah. It's just like, okay, look, I realize that it's in headline font, but there's three misspellings in the headline.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
That's fun. But you didn't embarrass them or anything like that.
No.
Yeah, you just explained to them politely, like, hey, yeah, that's good. That's good.
We had the other side of it. My brother texted me the other day. I think I told you this. He texted me as my mom was visiting. He's like, Mom just told me, did you know that Peyton and Eli Manning have a nephew who's a college quarterback?
You did tell me that. Yeah, that's great.
My mom was saying it like, oh, did you realize?
She was probably, she was probably pretty proud too.
Like, yeah.
She thought she was springing it on Dan.
My brother was good. He was polite about it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, he texted me under the table, but still.
Yeah. That's great. We've got the two OC interviews today. Wonder what we hear later on today. We've not heard any rumblings about how these interviews have gone so far with any of these guys.
No, we haven't heard rumblings about squat.
No.
And I think part of that is the Texans are very, very careful in what they leak.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like to invite extra outside noise into it. It's always interesting, though, too, that I think the agents understand that, because you haven't heard any leaks that, this interview went really well. You haven't gotten Ian Rappaport up there saying, like, Jeff Nixon, a very viable candidate,
said to
have, quote, hit it out of the park, according to sources. And you can see he forgot to cross out the A from agent on the...
According to his sources. No, that's a great point. And there's been no discussion about how they did in the interviews. But you're right. For none of these candidates so far that I can remember, has there been anything where the Nugget Hussies are trying to skew our view on them one way or the other?
Right.
And that happens a lot.
There's no lobbying on behalf of sources with a Z.
Yeah.
That I don't. It, in one way, it's frustrating because it just seems like a complete black box.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going
it's
on.
Bad for radio. I'll say that.
We're just gonna see those puffs of smoke out of the NRG Stadium right. to tell us. Is it white smoke when a Pope has been
white
chosen?
Smoke? Yep. That's right. That's right. Yeah. It's white smoke when it's black smoke when Notre Dame loses in the national title game. That's how it goes.
Catch up on Pope news.
Yeah.
Lopez, what's going on with the Pope?
Oh, what's man, his name? He's hanging
we
in
We now
there.
Go to our Pope correspondent, John yeah. Lopez.
Our papal correspondent.
He's having, like, he's yeah. having a good month.
Yeah. You look like a Roman Catholic. Yeah, what's...
Again, he's doing fine.
Actually,
till the national...
I'm not. Actually, I changed. I switched.
You did?
Yeah.
What'd you? Are you a Jew now?
No. I'm Episcopalian.
I was about to say, assalamu alaikum.
I'm Episcopal, just for various reasons, mostly because it's all the sin, half the guilt.
Yeah. No, that's good. Yeah. It's efficient.
Yeah, it's yeah. more efficient.
Efficient denomination.
Much like Catholicism.
Well, if you're planning on doing some sinning.
Right. Well,
main reason they have women priests.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't know where to go with that.
No. And
there are places I can go, just places I shouldn't.
And priests can get married.
Oh, okay.
That's always been one of those for me. Where
oh,
I'm
so
like,
it's an altruistic thing. For
yeah,
you.
But
you
it's still sure basically Catholicism,
have.
Same service, but yeah, just
it was always interesting,
a little less guilt.
It was created just specifically so the king could get divorced.
Yes,
right.
That's right. Yeah. Three times, I think.
Yeah.
So it was like it's the same thing. It started off as we're going to do everything exactly the same, except that
you can get divorced.
You can. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So Seth, did you know that? Is it yesterday that was the Lunar New Year?
Yesterday was
the beginning of the Lunar New Year.
Did you know that, Seth?
I think that's when the Pope puts on his goat horns and they go around.
No,
and
it's
they
when he eats
babies.
Chinese food.
Isn't that that's what I saw online.
Yeah.
See, I didn't know that.
There goes the AI summaries getting us again.
I think John and Reggie, I think we're both a little taken aback that I was not aware because you celebrated the Lunar New Year by what, John?
Going to eat Chinese food.
Chinese food. Okay. Which I feel like is really the bare minimum on these things. Yeah. Right? Like there's a lot more to these spring festivals for our Chinese and Vietnamese and other brethren.
Check the box.
We're just like, got some fried rice.
I got that done.
Yeah. You went and ate a version of Chinese food that doesn't actually exist in China.
That's right.
Yes. Yes. Actually, I really did. It was little Hunan chicken, man.
But this is the genesis of y'all's question of the day.
Yes. The question of the day is what slight inconvenience, nothing horrendous, what slight inconvenience would you wish upon your worst enemy?
Not the Chinese New Year.
No. We need to clarify. It's not because of the Lunar New Year. It's because you got indigestion.
Because I had Chinese food and about an hour later I was getting indigestion. Yeah. Then it got worse. And then in the middle of the night I woke up with more indigestion. I was drinking sparkling waters like they were going out of business.
Yeah.
So Reggie had, and I were talking about this, like just a slight inconvenience that you would wish upon your worst enemy.
Okay.
Okay. Does this rise above slight inconvenience?
Probably.
I would wish that his wife have a very close work friend like that.
Oh, that's good.
Work husband. That's awesome. That's a great answer.
This is checkers on the show and chess. Is
that's psychological warfare.
I was like, four flat tires. Seth was like messing with his mind. Oh my God.
That's awesome.
That's.
Oh, he's my work friend, honey.
Top that.
My work husband, which I hate that term.
She's hot.
My work wife.
You come home and she's making a lasagna. He's like, oh, that's for dinner? Like, actually, no, I'm taking that to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
Jeff asked for it.
Jeff loves lasagna. Yeah.
Jeff just went through a tough breakup. Yeah.
Yes, a tough breakup. Yeah. And then she's headed to the gym. Mysteriously, she never goes to the gym. Yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
That's another one. Yeah. Has the same, training. Trainer.
Yeah, personal trainer. New personal trainer.
Yeah.
Oh, man, there's going to be some good ones.
I feel like tennis coach is even better.
Yeah. A lot of bending over in short skirts, picking up tennis balls.
A lot of stroke talk.
For sure. Oh, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. Oh, so when is this?
10:40, baby.
10:40. All right. So
that'll be a good one. I'm not going to do anything for the next 40 minutes.
I mean, if that's the case.
In celebration of the Lunar New Year, I'm going to do nothing for the next 40 minutes.
Again, I'm not sure if that's how that works.
All right, fellas. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and a kung pao to you.
Thank you. Seth had a day today, man.
He did. I heard him say she's probably a lesbian anyway. And I'm like, what?
Right. That's why you listen to the show.
We are done. We are out of time.